Can't get enough of the podcast? Lucky for you, our video IQ platform on adorebeauty.com.au houses thousands of articles on skincare, makeup, haircare, and more. Plus, you can find a heap of video tutorials, ingredient spotlights, and brand breakdowns on our YouTube channel. Just click on Beauty IQ in the menu bar of the website or app, or search Adore Beauty on YouTube for more beauty content.
Adore Beauty acknowledges First Nations people as the traditional owners across the lands and waters of Australia. We recognise and pay our respects to elders past, present and future whose lands were never ceded. Welcome back to Beauty IQ, the podcast. I'm your host, Hannah First.
And I'm your co-host, Melissa Mason.
I just got back from a little vacay to country Victoria.
Cute.
And I have stayed in my fair share of Airbnbs and I came across probably one of the strangest items that I've seen in an Airbnb, because generally if the property is used, this one seemed to be like a permanent Airbnb. Like, I don't think that they lived there. It was kind of styled as you know, a rental. I was there with my family and they had a library. It had mostly kind of like travel books, coffee table books, you know, that sort of vibe.
Mm-hmm.
But it was very, very color coordinated so that it looked like it, you know, and so there was sort of a maroon book section and there was one book there and it just caught my eye. I don't know why, but it said manhood. So I like walk over and it's the first book that I pick up, even though there's like heaps of travel books and cookbooks. And so I pick it up and I'm like, what's this all about? And I honestly, it was a real shock because the book was called Manhood. And so I opened it up and the first page said the rise and the fall of the penis was what it was about.
The rise and the fall. It's very good wordplay there, guys.
So then I get to the table of contents. Yep, the contents. And, mm-hmm. and I'm reading through and it's got the testicles, the scrotum, the prostate, seminal glands, et cetera, et cetera. So it seems to be some sort of like history book of the penis.
Okay.
And like I start flicking through with my mum and we both just start like crying. Because we start reading through it and there's one of the paragraphs is titled The Smell of the Scrotum.
Which no.
But this is the history. This is the history. It's like giving you like the history from like a topic that was raised as early as the 1870s in the work of the American novelist. Like, it's really, you know, this historical
I'm actually
book.
Interested. Yeah.
But.
I can, yeah.
Me and my mum keep flicking through. There are like real life photographs.
Oh, no. I know.
Yeah.
Unsolicited dick pics, but in a book.
Unsolicited dick pics in a book. 100% the best way you could have described it. So that was the weekend was beautiful and the book was okay.
But back to the weekend.
I didn't really read much of the book, but we did flick through it and it was pretty funny. But interesting choice by the Airbnb owner to include some unsolicited dick pics in the property. But otherwise, the property was beautiful.
I feel like you're probably the first person to have picked up the manhood one, or you're the 50th.
I must have
been. It's either or. There is no in between. Either everyone's reading it or no one has touched it except for you. Oh, but look, Hannah, what is on today's episode?
So on today's episode for the Cringy Convo, we're chatting to Dr. Lucinda about whether you should or should not sleep in your tampons. Then we're chatting to makeup artist and AB staffer Megan about how to pick the right foundation for you. And of course, the products we didn't know we needed. Recently, Mel told us that she still sleeps with tampons in.
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted to know how bad is it to sleep in tampons. So we called in our go-to GP, Dr. Lucinda, to hopefully talk her out of it. Welcome again, Dr. Lucinda. It's been a while.
Hi, guys. Yeah, it's lovely to speak to you all again. I didn't realize this was the reason why. So I'm glad we're deep diving.
Oh, no.
Here.
I feel like I'm immediately being judged. Immediately, the judgment.
Absolutely.
I feel like you are our kind of version of Googling problems, except like instead of me Googling all my issues, we're like, can we get Dr. Lucinda on? So let's just start with why you shouldn't sleep with a tampon in.
Brilliant. Well, I am very happy you're using me instead of Google. It's a very good idea to go and see a GP so you can talk through your things, basically. So when it comes to tampons, like, I don't think really we get much education about it. Maybe things have changed now in school, but essentially we shouldn't be using them for more than 8 hours. So if your sleep is less than 8 hours, you're cool. All right.
Oh.
Yeah. So that's the general gist of it. It's ideal if you can replace it like every 4 hours, and just also making sure that you're using the right type of tampon for your flow. Like, I used to be pretty lazy and be like, I'm just going to use a heavy because I can't be arsed and I'm just going to use that for everything. But actually, mm-hmm. what you're doing there, if you're light and you're using a heavy one, you're going to be using it for longer, and it can cause a bit of trauma as well inside your vagina, which can also give you an increased risk of developing things like thrush, for example, or other kind of infections, because you're causing like little micro tears in the vagina potentially if you're using a bit of trauma when you're putting it up. Yeah.
Oh, hate that.
Lovely.
Oh, that's
lovely.
A horrible new fact. Horrible new fact.
Sorry.
I'm going to think about that every time I put a tampon in now, Dr. Lucinda. Thanks so much.
Perfect. You're very welcome. It's good news. But basically, the reason why you don't want your tampon in for a long period of time is that there is this tiny, tiny, tiny risk of getting a really serious infection called toxic shock syndrome, basically. It's super rare. It rarely happens, but you just don't want it to happen. And the reason why, like, it happens is that when you've got... like, you're probably aware of, like, we've talked about microflora in previous podcasts, but basically in our vagina, like on our skin, in our gut, we've got this thing called a microflora, which is where we have bacteria, viruses, fungi that normally live in those areas. And they normally live in harmony and don't cause any problems. But when we change the environment, so for example, specifically during our period, when we put a tampon in, if we leave it in for too long, what that does, it creates an environment where bacteria can grow. And when they grow, if they just go out of control, they produce toxins. And if our body doesn't recognize it and doesn't defeat those toxins and provide antibodies to break down the bacteria, that overgrowth of bacteria can then seep in through the vaginal wall, through these possible micro tears that we've induced by putting something up there. And then that can go into our bloodstream and cause toxic shock syndrome, which is potentially life-threatening. It's basically like an infection through your whole bodily system. But like I said, super rare. But that's why we don't like leaving things up there for a while.
So if I'm hearing this correctly, actually, if Mel sleeps less, you know, say she slept 7 hours, that, like, that's actually not as bad as if you leave it in all day for work. Yeah. Like, you leave home, you come home and you've left it in for like a 10-hour day.
Totally.
I don't know why. In my mind, I thought it was just the act of sleep that was the problem. But it's
lying down.
The fact that it's longer than 8 hours. Does this not prove how little we were taught? It was just do not sleep in a tampon, toxic shock syndrome. That's all you heard. Yeah. Those were the two phrases.
Yeah. Well, that's why it's good to ask these questions, right?
So, Mel, how much do you sleep?
Well, I was going to tell you that I do all of the above. I do everything wrong. Okay. So 1,000,000% I use super tampons because I can't be bothered. Oh, no. Yeah. I have definitely
the micro tears, Mel.
I didn't know about the micro tears. And now I'm traumatized. My brain is traumatized. And obviously my vagina is also traumatized. Like, I feel like I want to make an apology right now to my vaginal canal. Having not had children yet. I've already given it so much trauma.
look, oh, thankfully that area is very, very full of blood flow and blood supply. So it's super good at healing itself if you do have any trauma down there.
Okay,
good news, right?
Because it's mad at me. I think it's mad at me. Like, I would say I use super tampons on my inverted commas heavy days regardless. Mm. In my mind, it was like 8 hours was the goal. of how long to have it in for, not like the maximum.
Wow.
So I was like, aiming for everyone.
That's it's like cost per use of the tampon. Yeah. Like I'm getting really cost. Yeah.
Honestly, I was totally honestly like, I actually thought if you took them out at 4 hours, this is how little I knew about this. I thought that meant that like you needed to go up again, like up another size to like XXL tampons.
Well, there we go.
Yeah.
There
but go. Sleeping's not so bad. I think I sleep probably 8 hours and I definitely would take it out once I wake up. Mm. I think where I need to change my behavior is how early I will put that one in, because sometimes I'll just be like, oh, like come home, change tampons and then like not change it right before bed. Mm. So there's probably like I'm going over the threshold more with like the evening, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But I feel like these are all the rage. I have not yet mastered them. I want to. I bought one, yet I look at it and it scares me. I'm talking about period cups. I'm so scared of them. They're just like a huge cup. They're so huge in my mind. I know you fold them to get them in, right?
Totally.
But then I'm like, how is it just exploding in there into its big circle and just staying put? And then also, I suppose, like getting past my obsession with the look of them, like one of the main claims is that it's this great option because you can leave it in for longer than a tampon. So can you school us on those maybe?
So basically, the same situation lies for using these menstrual cups or anything that you put up there, you know, even like contraceptive diaphragms and stuff. You do not want it up there for more than 8 hours. That is like the rule. Because at the end of the day, you're still sort of like, you know, you're harvesting a lot of blood potentially up in that area, which is giving those right environments again for increasing your bacterial load in that area. And when you do put a cup up, you know, it's a bit of a situation getting it up there. I've tried it myself. I haven't found them totally comfortable, but they say there's different sizes for different people, like if you had kids, if you haven't had kids. But I've come across this other one now that I'm about to try. Sorry, TMI. But
TMI in this like segment.
true. More TMI the better. It's more diaphragm-y rather than like big heavy duty cup. So I'm looking forward to using that because someone said that that was really good. At the end of the day, it can still cause a bit of trauma when you're putting it up there. You just don't want to have it there for, again, more than 8 hours. And when you first use one, maybe like take it out after 4 hours just to see how much blood is actually in there. Because if it is overflowing and getting a bit hectic, you want to be sort of washing it out a little bit more frequently as well. But they do say, like, as you mentioned, it can be used for longer, which is great. And it is more sustainable in the long run if you're just using that. But again, hygiene's really important just with any of these things. So making sure you've got clean hands when you're inserting it, making sure that you're sterilizing your menstrual cup as per their instructions. So when you're doing that, you should be fine. Because yeah, there has been a case, just one, but there has been a case where someone had toxic shock syndrome with a menstrual cup. So it can happen.
So it can still happen.
If you're sleeping in or you're going to be in bed for a while and you don't want to change it, you don't want to change anything. You just want to lie in bed. So are we saying that pads are the best overnight option for like a long night in bed?
Yeah, so that's the thing. So pads are a safer option because they're away from your cervix, basically, and your vaginal walls. Like I personally am a lover of period pants. I use them all the time. But the reason why I like those is that I used to get thrush a lot and I found out that that was actually because of the pads. And I tried organic, I then tried tampons, tried organic tampons just to see if there's any sort of chemical reactions or whatever. And I actually found that the reusable panties work the best for me.
The supermarket aisle looks so different now.
It does.
Like there's
it?
So many Pretty options cool. now. It used to when I was young, I felt like it was like there was a few options and now it is.
Oh, so what I wouldn't have given to be 13 years old, getting my period and having period underwear. What a vibe. Like we were just like those huge pads, those like triple layer pads. Oh, and you would walk in school and you would be like, can everyone hear the rustling that is happening in my underpants?
Yes.
We'd be like,
oh man.
And the overnight ones were like a nappy.
Yes, they were. And then I used to play netball and then the little flaps that would flip out of my scungies.
Your skirt comes up.
Oh, my gosh. There were a lot of embarrassing
You've got your wings.
Scenarios.
Your wings on display.
Wings. Your wings are on display. Just flapping in the breeze. Gosh, this has been such an informative, cringy convo. I have so much information to take away with me. First and most importantly, not to use my giant tampons anymore.
Thank you, Dr. Lucinda.
Thanks for having me on. Have a lovely rest of your day, guys.
So today we are chatting about how to pick the right foundation with makeup artist and AB staffer Megan. Welcome back.
Hi.
You were on the Bride to Be podcast, but now you are a bride.
Not a bride to be.
I'm a post-bride, I guess. I'm a wife. I feel like a 75-year-old woman when I say that.
The word wife sounds so old. Mm. Maybe it's like the last thing when we're like, you know, there goes our youth. But anyway,
yeah.
I'm really excited for this topic because I've always found picking the right foundation such a task. You don't want to spend, you know, $50, $60, $70 on something that you're then going to hate. So let's start from the beginning. What should you first be considering when you're choosing your foundation?
Yeah, so there's, I would say, maybe like 5 to 6 main things that you need to keep in mind when you're trying to choose like the foundation.
Mm-hmm.
But with saying that, there will be different foundations for different things. So for instance, you might have one foundation that you wear, you know, for your day to day, but then you might have another foundation for your special event vibes.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing I would say is know your skin type.
Yeah.
Or at least know how your skin interacts with foundation. So whether you're oily, dry, combo, or just sensitive or normal, that will help you when you're on product pages or when you're in store, you will be able to know, okay, I'm looking for something that can counteract oiliness, or I'm looking for something that will help hydrate my skin.
Right.
The next thing you want to think about is coverage. So how much of your natural skin do you want to be able to see through the foundation? And that can be light, sheer, medium to full. That can change. Like day to day, I'm usually sheer so that there's like pretty much nothing on my face. But then when I'm going out, I don't mind like a really full coverage just for fun. I don't even know why I do that. I just think I'm going out.
I do it too though, because I find I have full coverage for parties, for weddings, for long days, like anything where it's going to be like a long time, because I will find that my day-to-day dewy foundation
doesn't last.
Mm. It's more of a lasting thing for me, because then I will look at my face at the end of a day with like a long-lasting foundation or like a full coverage and I'll be like, damn, still working, still doing its job.
Yep, literally hit the nail on the head. The next thing is finish. So do you want dewy, matte, or satin finish, or just like a natural skin finish? I have seen natural skin finish on like product pages before when they're explaining a foundation, and I'm kind of like, what even is that? But I think I've ascertained it quite well now, where skin finish is just like, it's still dewy, but it doesn't have that like glowy shimmer that some other products might have.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought it was like a satin.
I feel like when it says skin finish, it has a little bit more of like that glass effect, if that makes sense. Whereas like a Giorgio Armani Lumina Silk is like that true satin finish where you look like airbrushed.
Right.
One other point I would think about is your shade, of course. Trying to marry up your head, your neck, and your décolletage. And then the last one is price point. Like, have a budget.
Yep.
If you don't have a budget, I really admire you. But if you do, have a budget and try to stick to it, because like you said, if you're spending, you know, hundreds and hundreds of dollars on a foundation that you're not sure you're going to love, it can be a negative experience.
Can I ask a personal question? Yeah. Is this a no-no? Because you talked about finish and coverage.
Mm-hmm.
Are you allowed to do this, or is this best practice? So I will mix a really thin, dewy skin tint with my Estee Lauder Double Wear.
100%.
Is that okay? Yeah, because it thins it down. It adds a little bit of dew, but then I also get the long wear and the coverage.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll touch on this later, but that's literally what I do
did that with today.
All of my clients.
Yeah.
Like even if someone says like I have super oily skin and they're like warning me, I will still put in like a MAC Face and Body, which is super luminous and light, because I just know that it's going to marry really well. And then you get that luminosity, but then you still get the staying power of Double Wear.
Yeah,
so
right.
Good.
100%. You're a makeup artist, Hannah.
Yeah, I was like, she's
you should be doing this.
She's hacked the system.
I actually got a mirror today and put it there and mixed it all together.
On the mirror?
Yeah, on the mirror.
Oh, that is so makeup artist
of you. I know, so makeup artist of me. So onto skincare, what kind of skincare steps would you recommend before applying foundation? So you don't want to add like too much skincare. You don't want to add not enough. Like what's the perfect balance?
Yeah, I would just say it depends obviously on your individual skin type. So we can't give like a blanket rule, but if I was to give a blanket rule, just hydrated skin. So whatever that looks like for your individual skin type, follow that. I would stay away from any serums that you know are going to peel. You know, maybe stay away from the 8-step skincare routine if you're trying to have like a long lasting makeup look. Definitely hydrate your skin. And then the second one is exfoliate safely if you can, because exfoliated skin honestly creates the perfect canvas for foundation. If you are, I guess, more sensitive towards exfoliation, something like a mandelic acid or a lactic acid, something more gentle, start off with that. Obviously, I'm not a skin therapist, so consult with your skin therapist on that one. If you have a more resilient skin type, fruit enzymes, retinol, lactic acids, again, your main step. But hydrated skin, because if you have texture, hydration helps. If you have dry skin, hydration helps. Even if you have oily skin, hydration helps so that your skin doesn't think, oh, I'm dehydrated, let's create excess sebum, and then you just end up more oily. Yeah. So just hydrate. That's the biggest skincare step.
And I don't know if this is factual, but I feel like when my skin's dehydrated, like when I haven't put in the effort to like use my hyaluronic acid serum, use like a nourishing moisturizer and let it all settle in, I find that my face like eats the foundation. Like, yes. I don't know if it's actually eating it, but it just doesn't.
My face eats.
But it goes away really quickly. And I'm like, I don't know where this has gone. Like, where did my foundation go?
I do know what you mean. Because the other day I did a full face of makeup for work, got home, and I said, I did my makeup for work, Mum. And she said, you don't look like you've got any makeup on. My face ate
savage
the makeup.
Yeah, it ate it.
I love Linda's commentary. Bring her back more. But that's true, because I've noticed that when I've applied a foundation to myself and like my usual drier patches on my face are like around my nose and my mustache area. And if my skin is dry, everything will cling straight to those areas and I just look whack. So yeah, just hydrate, hydrate, hydrate. Otherwise, yeah, your skin will eat your foundation.
It will eat it. Yes. That is not factual, everyone, but it might be factual. Anyway, that actually leads into my next question because, and this is extremely for me, what do you do to prevent foundation from settling into fine lines and creasing throughout the day? Oh my gosh, I've never found a solution for this.
I hate to be the one to break it to us all, but you can't prevent it. Like genuinely, whilst our faces are moving, showing expression and just having a good time, you're always going to encounter fine lines, a little bit of bunching. You can help, I guess, push that time frame out by hydrating your skin again. But I have had so many clients say like, my under eyes always crease, like I've tried everything. Sometimes that's just our faces.
Yeah.
You know, it just kind of is what it is. But a good tip to alleviate that throughout the night or day is even if you just take your ring finger, it's really soft, it's nice and warm, and you literally just pat out anywhere on your face that you're feeling bunching.
It is really soft, actually.
Super soft, especially under eyes, just a quick pat.
Yeah, okay.
Otherwise, a foundation brush with nothing on it and you just kind of jiggle it around, especially in those marionette laugh lines, just jiggle the foundation out. But I hate to be the one to say it, but there's really no preventing it.
Yeah.
It's our faces. Yeah.
It's just maintenance, I guess, through the day.
I reckon I might be able to guess some of these. What are your top three favorite foundations that you've used on clients for weddings and special events? And I'm going to say, I reckon, because the shoot that we did for the podcast, I asked her because my foundation looked so good.
It did look so good.
And it was Luminous Silk.
Of course.
Okay. So that's the first one. Should I try and guess them all?
Guess all three for me.
The Dior.
Yes.
Okay. What's that called again?
Backstage.
Okay. Dior Backstage. I wasn't going to say that, but
Mac Face and Body.
Yes. Oh my God, you got. I wasn't going to say. I was going to say Estee Lauder Double Wear.
Yeah, I was almost going to say that. And then I thought you mentioned MAC Face and Body. And I feel like I've met a lot of makeup artists who love it because it blends so well with other foundations.
Yes.
And it's buildable.
She's a mixing medium. Yeah, she's the best. But I would say, yeah, MAC Face and Body, Dior Backstage are kind of like in one little category for me. So I'm going to count them as one. Okay. Estee Lauder Double Wear, 100%. Anyone that's oily, as soon as you need staying power, Estee Lauder Double Wear is just like, that's my go-to. I can't stray from her. And then Luminous Silk by Giorgio Armani. I've heard such polarizing opinions on that foundation, but I personally really love it.
It feels bridal.
Every makeup artist that I've ever met uses it for wedding or event or photography.
Yeah. And again, a really good mixer. Like I can mix a little bit of that in everywhere and it just kind of works.
I do love that finish. You're right. It's like an airbrush. It's like a, yeah. The blurring is insane on that.
Do you have any special mentions?
Special mentions. I do like Anastasia Beverly Hills. I think it's called Luminous Foundation. Mm-hmm. But that's a really good foundation that everyone sleeps on for some reason. Makeup Forever Ultra HD. That was hard to cull. That was going to add that in.
That was good. That's
and
a good
one. And that concealer as well is beautiful. Yeah. They're probably my main special mentions. And then a few other random brands, but we'll leave it at that.
Okay, so what about shopping for foundation online? We're obviously all doing it now. It's much easier than it used to be. But what are your tips when you're like looking to buy a new foundation but you're shopping online?
Yeah, it can be really tricky because I feel like the first thing you want to do is swatch it on your skin.
Yeah.
But I would say first know your undertone. So just know whether you have a warmer undertone or a cooler undertone. There is so much information on knowing your undertone online, but a quick, I guess, like basic guide is when you're holding up a piece of paper that's most similar to your complexion, do you feel like you throw more of a yellowy color or do you feel like you throw more of a blue or pink hue? And then you'll know, are you cool or are you warm?
What about the jewelry tip? What's that again?
Yeah, there's so many wives' tales with it. They say that if you wear gold jewelry that you skew more towards a warmer undertone. And if you wear silver jewelry, you could be a cooler undertone. Mm,
okay.
If you can wear both, maybe you're neutral.
I'm a gold.
I'm a gold too, but always thought I want to be bougie. Silver.
I don't think
it's... Yeah, same. Because... I'm like, I don't want to be a silver because I don't want to wear silver jewelry, so I just force it into being.
Well, that's the thing.
I just love gold.
Yeah. I just want to wear my gold hoops.
100%. There's also like vein things that they've said before, like yes, if you have a certain color veins. But I think the best way is to just try it out on your skin. You'll be able to see straight away.
Well, I was going to say, do you know what changed my life was Findation,
which we have
on site. This changed my life because I have all these old foundations that I just don't like, but the texture, like the texture's not good, it's too heavy, it's too light, whatever, but the color is perfect. The thing with foundation, so you can go to Adore Beauty and you can click on it when you're looking at a foundation type and it'll ask you to pop in like as many foundations that you've previously used, like the brand, the product, there's like so many in there, you'll probably find the one that you've used and then look at the bottom of what that shade was and it basically mashes them all together and figures out a very, very accurate, I've found, like match up of what your color is going to be in that new foundation you want to try. So if you know that you love Hannah talking about double wear and you're like, that's going to be for me. I've got Hannah's skin
fawn.
Type. Yep. You're not going to get fawn.
Oh no, you're going to put in your other foundation.
Hannah's going to get fawn.
I'm going to get fawn.
But you're going to like, you know, you can put in all your other foundations and you can find the right color. That is genius. Like whoever invented that.
Kate Morris.
Yeah.
Did you not know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah, Kate, you genius.
Co-founder. How clever.
I had no idea. Oh, she's a genius.
Yeah, but I've used that so many times for myself.
Yes.
I've recommended it so much. And it actually is scarily accurate. And the more matches you put in, so let's just say you put in 3 accurate foundation matches, it is even more spot on. So definitely give it a try, especially if you're shopping online and shade is your issue.
Amazing.
So we know everyone loves a product recommendation. Do you have a PWDKWM to share with us? And can you say that without looking at your screen?
PWDKWM.
That's way better than I did. It took me like 5 recordings to even get close.
I've heard it for a lot of years though. Yeah. CeraVe Salicylic Acid Cleanser.
Okay. Uh-huh.
So I have normal to dry skin. So the thought of a salicylic acid cleanser to me was like blasphemy.
Yeah.
But I tried it on my body first because everyone was raving about having it in your shower and using it on your body for smooth skin. Can confirm that works. But then I just, you know, I went a bit YOLO, used it on my face.
Chaotic evil energy.
It's so off brand for me, but I did it. And I've seen such a change in my skin. And for some reason, like, I don't feel stripped. I don't feel dry.
Dry skin.
Yes.
Needs exfoliation.
Exactly.
Which people often don't
get all the dead skin cells
think
off.
About. Because, you want to get the dead skin cells off. So I guess if it's gentle enough as a formula, it's clearing off all of that dead skin. So you're going to get a brighter complexion out of it. Wow. Yeah. Okay.
So that was a random one. And the other one is just Anastasia Beverly Hills lipsticks. They're amazing.
Oh.
Amazing. Are you wearing it today?
I'm wearing it today. Yeah.
It's beautiful.
So they come with like a lustrous finish. I know I hate it when people use random words, but that is genuinely the word that I would use to describe it. And I pop a gloss over the top because I'm into a glossy lip, but you wouldn't have to.
What color is that? Because that's the perfect, like, brown. Dusty pinky brown.
So it's in the shade Dusty Rose.
Okay,
so
Dusty Rose.
So you explained it quite well.
Very much did exactly
what I said. Did you say Dusty Rose?
I did. And it's these are actually called the Anastasia Beverly Hills Satin Lipstick.
Okay,
if I
love
it. Back to my wedding day, I would have worn this.
Oh, that's a big
reference. You're like, we're getting married again.
Yeah.
Because I specifically need to wear this lipstick.
Oh, gosh. Can you imagine?
Thank you so much for coming on. I feel like I've learned so much. I feel far more informed about what my foundation is. But no, I will not be figuring out if I'm a gold or a silver because I'm going to keep wearing my gold jewelry. Thank you very much.
I love it. Thanks so much for having me.
So my product today is the Ulla Henriksen Banana Bright Plus Eye Cream. This must be their cult product.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
And I can see why, because I've had it sitting on my skincare cabinet and eye creams, I'm a bit lazy and I've got so many to try. I honestly was like, whoa, like I haven't actually had this reaction to an eye cream ever a noticeable difference from using it. Have you used it?
I'm exactly like you in that I don't really use eye creams and sometimes, I will bring my serum up under my eyes, which I have heard from various skincare experts is definitely something you should and can do. But with eye creams, my eczema is so concentrated around my eyes that it has to be the most gentle type of eye cream. And then I'm just like, well, is there a point? But I have heard amazing things about this eye cream from people who do not suffer from eye eczema. So I'm excited to hear what you think.
The standout for this, and I think what makes it cult and why people must love it, is the brightening. It's so noticeable. Right. So I had a look at, it obviously has active ingredients in there too because it is an eye cream. It's got vitamin C, obviously antioxidant protection. And then it's also got a couple of other ingredients in there, bioflavonoids, hardy orange extract. But I think the thing that really makes this product stand out is that it's got banana powder inspired pigments. So basically they are light reflecting yellow mineral pigments. So the only way to describe it is you put it on and you're like, oh my God, it just really gives this instant brightening effect of an illuminator under the eye, but it's not makeup. It's an eye cream. The other thing that it does is gives a subtle color correction and definitely boosts radiance under the eyes. So I was just really, I don't know. I just wasn't expecting it. I just put it on and was like, oh, that's instant brightening. So it's kind of got the great active ingredients for the under eye area, but it also, I think, particularly under makeup, it just gives you that natural brightening under the eye. That is my product. I really, really rated it.
That sounds so good. Maybe I need to try it because I love skincare. I love this trend in skincare of incorporating just a teeny tiny bit of color correcting.
Tiny bit of make, like a teeny, yeah. like take makeup, but not quite. We're on the same page, Mel.
Yes, because I am really enjoying not wearing makeup and especially I'm not really wearing makeup. In the Northern Territory, it's so hot, particularly at this time of year. So I just haven't been wearing makeup. So when there's a moisturizer with a tiny bit of illuminating or an under eye cream with just a little color correction, I just think when you tip over into more tinted moisturizer, I'm like, well, no, that's too much. That's too much of the actual makeup on my face. It's those little things.
What's yours today?
It's interesting for me. I've gone for a nail product and I think sometimes with product we didn't know we needed, which is one of my favorite things to do because I just love talking about things that I love, is finding things that I kind of have loved for a while, but because I'm new to the podcast, I can talk about them because you've not heard that I love them. And so one of them is the Essie Nail Care Gel Setter Top Coat. So my obsession is wider than just this Essie top coat, but I will talk about it specifically because it's one of the best. The best invention in nails, and I don't care about you SNS girlies and your whatever other things everyone else is obsessed with. To me, the best invention was these at-home inverted commas gel top coats, because what they're designed to do is mimic that salon gel, UV gel, the proper one where you put your hand under the thing and then we've got to wear sunscreen because it's giving us these are the things that stay in my head. They live in my head rent free. That top coat, it's trying to mimic that level of toughness. So I'm really clumsy. I throw my hands around like God knows how. I can't wear nail polish unless I'm wearing this top coat because I will somehow chip it within a day. Like I've been known to go to the salon and within the day we have a chip. Like I'm just not gentle. I'm not a gentle person.
I can't even get shellac because I get chips.
What?
It has to be SNS or it's nothing. It's one or the other.
Yeah.
It's a waste of money otherwise for me.
Yes, this is the thing. Like, and but I do love this top coat and it's really good. I use it often on my toenails, but also I would use it on my, I would just use it every single time. Like there's no time that I would paint my nails and not use one of these gel top coats. And so they're basically designed to, yeah, be really hardy and long lasting. But the Essie one has just really good reviews. There's one on Adore Beauty that says, this is a must have if you want salon-like nails. They look just like I've had them done professionally. The gel coat lasts a good time and keeps my nails looking beautiful. And this is something that I think additionally that I love about it is it really does give you that glossy finish that you get in a nail salon. If you put on like a nail polish that just isn't really all that in terms of quality, but then you put this on top of it, it gives it that glossy salon finish and it helps it last longer. It is $19.95. So we're looking at a small pizza. Maybe a margarita pizza price. I'm still sticking with the pizza prices.
Even margaritas have gone above 20.
But look, speaking of nails, when I was picking this product, it sparked up this conversation that I just think we need to have because I have a wedding coming up. And if you're a regular podcast listener, you may have remembered me talking about bridal showers recently and all of the chaos that comes with them. There's a different level of chaos for weddings that I've noticed, which is when I'm a wedding guest. And so I am a guest. I'm not a bridesmaid. I'm not doing anything special. I'm just going to this wedding and having a lovely time on my friend's dime. But I get into this like headspace where because it's an event, I need to go to every salon that exists to do every beauty treatment that exists. Like it started out with, I need a hair trim. That's pretty normal. Like I hadn't had a hair trim in a while. I think that's pretty standard going to a wedding kind of salon experience. Then it was, I need a spray tan. I'm going to back myself on this one because I just wanted to be tan all over and not have to bother like trying to get my back and like bother with patches or anything. So spray tan, sure. It got a bit weird when I suddenly decided I need to get acrylics for this wedding and I've never had acrylics in my life. In my mind, I got obsessed with the idea of having long almond-shaped 70s nails and it, like they're pretty like double the length of my current nail. So it's like very much like they stick it on. I don't really understand how it works. I've never had acrylics, but...
So you get a tip put on and then they do SNS?
I don't know. Yes.
Okay.
The point being, I haven't had anything stuck on my nail ever. And I just have gotten obsessed with this thing. Like I have to get this done for this wedding. I must go and get my acrylic / SNS done for this wedding. And then it's just snowballed from there. I've talked myself out of getting my eyebrows done because I haven't had my eyebrows done in years because I don't have a lot of eyebrow to work with. And every time I go, I'm disappointed. So I was like, no, Mel, it's not suddenly magically going to look good.
Should have gotten lamination. You should have gone all the way.
Go all the way. I was like, what else can I get? I was like, I was talking to some friends and everyone has gone mad. Like we've all gone mad. I've got friends getting facials. I've got friends getting, you know, their lashes lifted and things. I think that when you're going as a guest to a wedding, you almost like gaslight yourself into thinking you're the main character. And it's like, actually, you're not. Like, you're literally no one. You're like someone in the crowd. And I'm probably spending more than the bride is spending at this point. But yeah, I don't know.
Well, I'm excited to see the fake nails on Instagram. Please, I can't wait to see your first rodeo with fake nails. Can't wait. Well, that's it from us this week. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Thanks everyone for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe and tell your friends. It helps other people to discover us and we'd love to know what you thought about this podcast. So if you could leave us a review, that would be much appreciated.